So welcome, everyone. I would like to invite you to the conversation with Mr. James Rogers, co-founder and director of research at the Council on Geostrategy, where he specializes in geopolitics and British strategic policy. Previously, he held positions at the Henry Jackson Society, the Baltic Defense College, and the European Union Institute for Security Studies. Welcome, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here, and I hope we have a very useful discussion.
And our conversation is part of the project called Poland's Regional Position in Times of Global Tensions and Rivalry, supported by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Poland within the Public Diplomacy 2021 project. My name is Marcin Chruszczel. I am a graduate of the PhD program in political science at the University of Wrocław, and it is my pleasure to conduct this conversation. And we will be talking mainly about Central European cooperation seen from the British perspective. So the first question I would like to ask you, Mr. Rogers, is about the role that Central Europe place in the British foreign policy. How would you describe it?
That's a very interesting question, and I think one that's become more important over the last 20 to 30 years, at least since the end of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. So traditionally, I think it's fair to say that Britain's approach towards the continental mainland of Europe has been to prevent the emergence of some form of dominant power. And this was put forward very eloquently, I think, by Winston Churchill in the aftermath of the Second World War, where he said, it doesn't really matter which country it is, whether it was France or Spain or Germany, or you might add even Russia. It doesn't matter which country it is. If one of those countries sought the overlordship of Europe, that's to say to become increasingly dominant, to revise borders, often by force of arms, to extend that influence, then the United Kingdom, being a relatively small but densely populated and economically productive country off the coast of Europe, had an interest in preventing the said potential overlord from emerging. So it would therefore thrust its weight behind a coalition, fund that coalition, provide it with resources, and then eventually to bring the said overlord down. And that is what British statecraft has tried to do for the past three to four, if not five centuries, since at least England became a major power under the reign of Elizabeth I. Now, of course, that was initially focused primarily on Western Europe, the areas around the UK, and there was always a traditional focus on the Low Countries. The Low Countries, that's to say the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, to some extent also northern France, being seen as the back door into England. So if a major power became very influential there, it could potentially raise an army and then take it across the English Channel or the North Sea and invade England, and therefore challenge London, which is of course the capital and the nerve centre of British power. So Britain's focus was traditionally on that region, and that explains to no small extent why the UK became so heavily involved in the First World War, and then also, of course, to some extent, the Second World War, as well as many of the previous conflicts. But since the end of the Second World War, the UK has become increasingly interested in the affairs of Central and Eastern Europe, not only in ensuring that the Soviet Union would not move westward and challenge Britain's traditional areas of influence, but also particularly once the Cold War ended and the prospect of the enlargement of NATO and the European Union became a possibility, that British statecraft eventually switched to focusing more on to those regions. And that is why I think today the UK plays a disproportionate role in the enhanced forward presence, NATO's enhanced forward presence in the Baltic region, and also in the tailored forward presence in the Black Sea region. And the UK today is the largest contributor to the enhanced forward presence. It has the most troops deployed to the most countries, both Estonia and to Poland. It's the lead nation in Estonia, and it supports the United States in Poland. And it has played a fairly prominent role in helping to ensure that NATO deters Russia from folly or erroneous actions in that region. Ditto in the Black Sea region, the UK has played a fairly prominent role, not least in supporting Ukraine since the Russian invasion and occupation of Crimea in 2014, in supporting and even initiating Operation Orbital, which is the British support provided to Ukraine in the form of the training of Ukrainian forces, the provision of military equipment, and most recently, the provision of loans to help refinance the Ukrainian Navy and logistical support ashore. The UK has also continued to maintain a fairly prominent, even persistent, naval presence in the Black Sea region, which of course came to the fore only a few months ago in June when HMS Defender, a Type 45 destroyer, one of the most powerful escorts the Royal Navy has, clipped areas that Russia considered its own territorial waters off the coast of Crimea. And this caused something of a small international incident, but one nonetheless that was calibrated under maritime law and at least in Britain's from Britain's perspective, supportive of Ukraine's claims of sovereignty in those regions. So we can see from these different measures, whether in the Baltic or in the Black Sea region, that the UK has continued to play and even amplified the role it plays in trying to underpin European security. And I think ultimately the reasons for this remain fundamentally unchanged. Britain favours a Europe which is stable and secure, where there is no potential power that seeks overlordship. This time, of course, the potential overlord is Russia. And the UK supports democratic open countries that have a vested interest in maintaining the same type of open international order in Europe that Britain does. And so long as that sustains, then Britain will support those countries, which explains in turn why Britain has played such a role in Europe over the last at least 50 or 60 years in a modern context, but you know, with a longer pedigree going back some centuries beyond it.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe then the cooperation between the UK and the Visegrad Group as a coherent group of Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary and Slovakia in the recent years? And has Brexit changed something in this respect, how the UK perceived the Visegrad Group?
Yes, that's a very good question. So, I mean, the UK has, I would say, sought to, let's say, diversify its traditional partnerships. And I think that's in keeping with the points that I was just raising, insofar as with the Russian invasion and occupation of parts of Crimea in 2014, and of course, going even further afield, the more revisionist Russian approach that we've seen in recent, even over the last decade, that the region itself has become geostrategically more important, and notwithstanding as well its admission into NATO and of course the European Union. So the entire region has become more important to the UK. And of course, Poland is the largest and most influential country in Central and I would say also Eastern Europe. So there has been a kind of drive on Britain's part to diversify its traditional partnerships that were established after the Second World War, primarily with France, but also with Germany, West Germany, and then the reunited Germany, as well as also the Netherlands, a traditional British partner going back some decades, if not centuries, and Italy and Spain in a more modern context. The UK has sought to diversify its portfolio of partnerships towards Eastern and Central Europe. And obviously Poland being the most influential country has been one of the key countries there. You might also add to this that since the admission of Poland to the European Union, there's been quite a large level of migration from Poland to the UK. So there's quite a strong social connectivity between the two countries now, and that may have further animated this this change. So I think that the logical countries for this to fall on, and this explains why the UK has sought to prioritize and deepen relations with Poland over the last few years. Of course, I think it was in 2017 that the two countries signed a bilateral defense treaty. Poland is the only other country other than France that Britain has such a treaty with in within the NATO era within Europe. And there are potentialities for further cooperation in the future as well, notwithstanding also the commitment that Britain has made to Poland's security through the enhanced forward presence, and also more recently through sending Royal Engineers to help to contain the fallout of Belarus's migration policies and border policies that we've seen destabilize the entire region. So that explains, I think, some of the importance that Britain has placed on the region. Now, has that changed since Brexit? Well, I think to some extent it has. There was already a deepening relationship between Britain and the region, but the issue of Brexit has compounded that and forced the UK, insofar as it can no longer pursue these relationships through formal structures in the EU, to diversify its portfolio of diplomatic relations and to try and focus in new formats. And that is, I think, one of the reasons why Britain has sought to deepen even further the relationship. And only, I think it was a month and a half ago, Liz Truss, the new British Foreign Secretary, explained that the Visegrad group, alongside the Baltic states, would be prioritised by Britain as a part of a network of liberty to help to not only stabilise Eastern Europe in the face of Russian aggressiveness, but also to contribute to an open international order in Europe, and mm-hmm. to help maintain, let's say, some degree of balance between the western half of the continent, which traditionally has held the economic and political resources, and the eastern half, or the central and eastern half of the continent, mm-hmm. Which Britain seeks to emphasize and to help make more resilient in a more competitive and strategic age.
Mm-hmm. So as far as I understand, the Visegrad group is perceived by the UK mainly through its capacity to provide security and stability in the region of Central and Eastern Europe. That's how we should read this British foreign policy, that the four countries in Central Europe are mainly useful because they are able to stabilize their surrounding.
Well, of course, in part, but mm-hmm. it goes beyond that. And there is, of course, an economic dimension to this. So mm-hmm. there, the four countries have multiple millions of people, and the economy, particularly of Poland, has been growing quite substantially in recent years. So there is also, of course, an economic dimension to this, besides also the societal dimension that I mentioned a few moments ago. That's to say that there are many, I would think, hundreds of thousands of Poles now living in the UK, and there have been established relationships that have connected families between the two countries and of course the other three within the Visegrad group. So there is this connection, or this dimension as well. And the three, the economic, the strategic, stroke security, and the societal or family relations, I think are compounding the desirability of UK interaction with Central and Eastern Europe, particularly the Visegrad Four, but also the Baltic Three. And together, these different dimensions are leading to closer relations between the UK and those countries.
Mm-hmm. So when speaking about economy, I would like to ask you, how would you describe the position of the United Kingdom towards the 3Cs initiative, which is focused more on infrastructure, more on developing trade in the Central European region, and also, you know, in the Western Balkans? So is it in the UK interest to engage in this initiative?
Yeah, I mean, Britain's role in the 3Cs initiative has been until now relatively small. The UK isn't a participant. It isn't even an associated partner in the same way that, say, Germany and the United States have become. So the UK hasn't really played a very prominent role in this initiative. It's seen primarily as a means for countries in the region to improve their connectivity, particularly between the north and south of the countries within the 3Cs initiative, connecting, of course, the Baltic, the Black Sea, and the Adriatic Seas. Now, I think the UK generally is very supportive of the initiative because it will increase the connectivity of the region and in a way that hasn't previously been given too much emphasis. After all, the EU, through its various funding initiatives, has funded east-west infrastructure. So if you look at the motorway systems that are fanning out across the central and eastern European region, they tend to go generally east-west, or at least those are the ones that were initially prioritised. So the Three Seas Initiative aims to facilitate greater north-south connectivity, and I think the UK would be generally very supportive of that. Now, the UK, of course, as I said a moment ago, isn't a member and isn't even a partner of the initiative, but I think that there is growing interest in the UK. Only a couple of months ago, I participated in an event in the Palace of Westminster, organised by some British MPs to get some focus and attention on the Three Seas Initiative and to think about how the UK could potentially interact with it in the future. And there was some interest in this, and I think it's something that's going to be put further on the agenda in the future. And of course, any initiative that serves to facilitate that will be beneficial insofar as it will get British strategists and policymakers thinking about the role that the UK could play in the initiative, either to support it potentially economically, but also in terms of a security and strategic sense. Now, I know, of course, that the Three Seas Initiative isn't as such a security or a strategic initiative. It's primarily economic and infrastructural. But nonetheless, there are some great synergies between those three or four dimensions. And in that context, I think Britain would also have some interest in it, given the things that we've mentioned earlier about Britain's interests in the strategic situation in the region.
Mr. Rogers, you have already said that Poland is considered as a regional leader in Central and Eastern Europe in the eyes of the British foreign policy. So I would like to ask you about the prospects for future cooperation between the UK and Poland. What are the obstacles and what are the chances in front of us?
Yes, of course. So, I mean, Britain has engaged with Poland primarily through a NATO context. Both countries are staunch advocates of the alliance. They're staunch advocates also, of course, of the transatlantic connection, both with the United States and with Canada. Those two countries being, alongside Britain and Germany, the two main framework nations in the enhanced forward presence and the main supporters of, I would say, the Atlantic Alliance more generally. So, I mean, there's a great deal of potential there, particularly if the situation deteriorates further on the, well, some would call it the eastern flank of NATO, others the sort of central gateway. The point being that, I mean, there's a great deal of opportunity there in the event that the strategic environment deteriorates further, and that's quite a possibility, for further reinforcement of Poland and the Baltic states in the context of the enhanced forward presence. So there are potential possibilities there. In addition to that, there is the bilateral relationship between the UK and Poland, and I think that will also grow and mature in the coming years, not only because of the strong connections between the two countries in terms of the large number of Polish migrants that have moved to the UK over the last 10 to 15 years, but also in the context, as I said earlier, of Britain's interest in Central and Eastern Europe. Now, the defence and security treaty that the two countries signed a couple of years ago obviously provides a platform for this, but I don't think it has been entirely utilised to the extent that it might have been. And then there are, of course, those initiatives that we were just talking about, how Britain potentially interacts with the Visegrad group, but also the Three Seas Initiative. So I think it's now down to the two countries to determine how they cooperate in the aftermath of Brexit, given that shared interests in the region to pursue that. And really, there's no limit to what could be achieved. It just creates some creative thinking, given the changed strategic environment in which Europe itself is beginning to exist in.
Okay. So Mr. Rogers, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. and with providing us with a geopolitical perspective on the relations between Central Europe and the UK. Thank you very much for your time. I would like to also thank you to our listeners and invite you to listen to the other podcasts also we have recorded in the frame of this project. So thank you very much, Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers is a co-founder and director of research at the Council of Geostrategy. We also invite you to go there and have a look at the work that the Council is doing.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.